CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, people of Earth.
How are you?
All right, let's do this. We've got a bunch of stuff to get to this morning. We've got the lovely Pumima Shiho, who is ready to go this morning. I see you're in your house and not at the office, Pums. Is that because you could trust the load shedding schedule today? Yeah, I know, Shane. I felt the same way. You know, last night the power went off here, and, well, it went off in the afternoon, like 5. And then it came on, and then it went off again, like almost immediately after. So I thought, uh-oh. Then it did that again about half an hour later, and I thought, uh-oh. And then I realized, no, we're screwed, because there's some kind of, like, a transformer is blown or something.
Have I told you about the fact that I live in the part of Joburg that's got one of the oldest substations?
The oldest substation?
Yeah, the oldest substations.
Yeah.
And so every time the load shedding happens, comes on and off, it puts extra strain on the aged infrastructure.
Right, which makes sense.
And more often than not, when the schedule ends and we're supposed to come back on stream, that thing does what? Trips.
Oh, God.
Can't handle the load, so it trips. And then it takes 4 hours before anybody, like, gets out there to fix it. And it's a mess.
What a bunch of assholes.
It's a mess. And I had a conversation with a friend of mine who runs a very big business.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about it, and we were talking about what is it going to take for all of us, South Africans and the government in particular. Oh, this was after Musi's whole blow up at Scopa.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
To understand and accept that maybe we must stop throwing good money after bad in trying to fix and bring on stream Ekusile and all of that. Maybe we just need new infrastructure. We just need to start again, start from scratch, build and let Eskom become a small player.
Right. I would be so for, and I'll tell you what, there are plenty of international businesses that would come in here and set up little rival entities. The problem is government will not let go of this thing. They will not let it go. They are so hooked on this drug, it's like heroin to them. They've realized that this is the best place to siphon off money. And even now they're doing it. I don't believe for a second that this Kusile or Medupi, that these things are still, that they cost as much as they tell us it costs. It can't possibly. We could have built like 2 massive nuclear plants by now with the cost of these things.
What fascinates me more than anything, though, is the fact that the people working to build Medupi and Kusile build fire stations all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about us that sparked off?
They see us coming. It's like those customers, you know, when you know, in certain shops, like you, the shopkeeper just knows when a certain kind of person walks in there, they're about to drop a bunch of money, right? And you can just see if you watch that person walk around the store and they're like, okay, we're going to charge her way more than we would. And she's going to pay it because she doesn't know where the money comes from. She's useless and stupid, and she's spending up a storm. So let's go for it. Let's nail her. That's what they see. They see us coming, and they see Eskom. And they see Eskom as this bottomless pit because, oh, well, what are the stupid South Africans going to do? They don't have an option. They don't have an option because there's no alternative for them. They're going to sit at home in the dark ages. Unless we come along and rescue them, and we can charge whatever we want for this. They see us coming, and they laugh. They laugh while they're rubbing themselves at night in their warmth. Rubbing themselves in different ways, yes. I mean that too. And they're like, these idiots. We're just going to take all their money, these morons. And they do. They get it, I tell you. All of our cash. Every single bit. Carl says, finally, logical talk from Pumi. Every single state-owned enterprise should be privatized. Yeah.
You know, Carl's one of my favorite people that comment on our stream here.
Mm-hmm.
Morning, Carl. Do you see my blue wall behind me?
Mm-hmm. Right. So, Pums.
Where's Makabantu this morning?
Jame, he's sick. People are getting sick. There are a lot of people who are getting flu, colds, COVID, God alone knows what, but everybody's getting sick at the moment. And it seems to be, if it is COVID, it's very, very contagious, but clearly not dangerous. Now, I have to say, I have been feeling, and I think you could have heard it if you listened to the show any day in the last 4 weeks, with me going and coughing and spluttering and choking like a fucking pressure cooker in the background. It's horrible. So I eventually decided enough of this. This is my job, and I can't wake up in the morning feeling this way. So I eventually went to the doctor yesterday. And, you know, here in my head I was thinking, oh, God, you've got lung cancer, you've got TB, because I always... I always jump to the most like outrageous conclusion, and I'm not a paranoid person, but I always go, all right, well, it was bound to happen. You're gonna
here we go.
You're going to die at some age, and it's going to be now. You know, so I went to the doctor yesterday morning, and she's fantastic because she's a no-bullshit doctor. I used to have a male doctor. I still go to him occasionally, but this is a younger woman, and I go to her. Her name's Megan. And I go and sit in front of her, and I say, all right, let me not bullshit you. Went for the vaxes last year, got COVID this time, had a test, so I know it was COVID. Haven't been able to shake this cough, and I give her all the symptoms and everything. Because, you know, she needs to know the stuff before she does the examination. And I'm not going to give her the diagnosis because I'm not a doctor. But I've been like everybody these days, and I've gone on the Google, and then I've discovered all these terrible, terrible, life-threatening conditions. So I'm like, look, I'm going to tell you straight up, I looked all this shit up yesterday.
Life-threatening conditions. Like,
and it seems, according to the internet, I'm going to die. So that's why I decided to come to a professional who studied this for years and who can separate, like, bullshit from truth. And let's do the examination once you're happy with that. Then I'll let you know what happens if you prescribe stuff. She's like, cool, perfect. So we're in and this is all taken, I kid you not, maybe 5 minutes in total from when I walk into her office until I walk out. She puts the thing in my ear. She puts the thing in my throat. She takes a look in my nose. She's like, nah, you've got post-nasal drip. That's all it is. And because this COVID has a lingering ability, the post-nasal drip's not helping you to get over it. So yeah, take these things in the morning, take this at night, and take these sprays twice a day. So I'm like, cool, done. Walk out of there 5 minutes later, walk into the chemist, which is just down the road, get this medicine. I mean, this is all over in a space of maybe half an hour. It was so elegantly done. And I feel better already today. So, you know, again, ladies and gentlemen, trust the experts. When it comes to your health, trust the person who knows and who sees you, who interacts with you at the local level, and get on with it.
At the local level.
Yeah, I mean, like, you're not gonna get a diagnosis from someone who's at the World Health Organization and who knows nothing about you. Talk to the person who you're sitting in front of, who you're paying that 400 rand to or whatever it is that your doctor's appointment costs, and get yourself sorted out. Don't sit there trying to figure it out yourself.
You're just making me think now, speaking about somebody who knows you at the local level. Mm. I've been going to the same GP since I was 17 years old.
That's amazing. That's cool.
I absolutely love him.
You have Isn't a family like, doctor, yeah.
He, but also, to get to him, he's like at the Lister building in the middle of Johannesburg. And what I've watched, and so in all the time when I go and see him, I've watched the morphing of Johannesburg into what it is now, and it's almost scary to go into Joburg. But I have to go. I can't go to any other doctor. I don't trust one.
He's your doctor, right? You're not prepared to go to any doctor. He's the one you want to go to.
He's my doctor, and I love him.
Well, it becomes...
Local level.
Right. And he knows the medical history, right? He probably knew he knew your parents. He knew
he didn't know my parents.
Didn't know your parents?
He only knew my parents after he knew me. So everybody's file. Now everybody goes to him. But everybody's file is under my name.
Oh, okay, but now he knows all the extended family, so he can also tell if there's a medical history and all of that shit. So he figured that out along the way. You see, I just think, yeah. I think that these things have worked for hundreds of years because they work. So don't mess with it. If we want to change everything. We want to do everything differently. I saw this brilliant story on the news the other day about this doctor in South Africa who she's able to operate on people from a distance. She uses this robot, and she can do a hysterectomy.
I saw that.
Great story, huh?
Yeah, I saw that. It is quite fascinating.
I love this. So Carl says, Gareth, you celebrities live a different life. If it was any of us, we would have sat in an hour-long queue at the doctor and then 30 minutes at the pharmacy. Must be nice to be famous now. All right, so first of all, I pay just like you pay. I made an appointment from home. So straight after the show at 8 o'clock, I phoned them, and they can give me an appointment at 10. So I would have waited in the queue if I'd gone straight there, just like everybody else. But I made an appointment, and they happened to have an opening. And I went to the same doctor who had an opening. I didn't go to the one who didn't have an opening. And then I went to the pharmacy, and there was two people in the line in front of me. So it didn't take long. Carl, feeling sorry for yourself. It's not because I'm a celebrity. Yeah. Oh, man. So anyway, have these things checked out. And I want to get back into shape, and I want to have a winter where I can be warm and feel good and healthy and happy. I don't want to be dragging some shitty disease from, you know, a couple of weeks back that hasn't yet left my system. Get over that, right? Let's get over it. Okay. We've got lots of stuff to get to this morning. Pumi has the most amazing fact for us today. I didn't know any of this was going on until you told me. So apparently, in South Korea, if you're a South Korean, you're about to become 1 year younger.
By presidential decree.
Sounds too good to be true. Are these politicians abusing us and making us feel stupid, or is this a real thing, Pumi? Come on, help me understand this. How's this president changing their age?
This is a real thing. So apparently in South Korea, they count your age from gestation, right? So your first year, as you are in your mummy's tummy,
right?
That is your first year. So when you are born, and this is the other part that's like mind trippy for me, is when you are born, you're already like a year old. And on the 31st of... On the 1st of January, everybody becomes a year older.
So what are they?
If you're born in November,
yeah,
you're born at 1 year. You know how we choose birthdays?
Yes.
The rest of us use birthdays as the counter. So in the first year, you're actually 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 2 months, 6 months.
Right.
And you only become a year when you have been from the date you were born. The next year, you become one.
Okay, so forgive me, that makes
sense. So they've always
just
used it.
You existed on Earth as a separate entity from your mother for a year. That's why you're 1 year old. Everywhere in the world except South Korea, where they just arbitrarily decide it took a year for you to gestate when actually it took you 9 months. So they're giving you an extra 3 months. Huh?
40 weeks. I don't know what weeks. It's 40 weeks. 40 weeks. But the reason why they count it as 9 months is because for 36 weeks, you're considered fully formed, and you can be born any time between 36 weeks and 42 weeks.
All right, so now that's how they've had it up to now. So basically what they're going to do is now going to catch up with the rest of the world and say, oh, no, you only turn one after you've been born and on your own for a year.
Yeah, and it was so strange. When I was reading about it, and I read about this in the BBC, so it's not like I found it in some obscure South Korean, but also apparently a lot of Eastern countries used to count age that way. And here we thought it was only soccer players that had a special age.
Yeah, so here's an interesting story from Easy Pickings, who says, my high school partner had a ball of a time in Durbanville, only with a Korean passport. She was clubbing at 15, which is crazy. So you see, this is what people were doing. It's amazing. All right, I don't know. I don't know how to talk in weeks. Just by the way, when mothers and parents in general start saying, "Oh, my baby, 18 weeks," I'm like, I know what that means. I can't figure that. In my head, I can't even work out, is 18 weeks old? Is it young? Is it small? Is it huge? Is it ready to be born? I have no
idea.
Well,
it's important.
I know, but I don't, I've never...
It's important, though, because kids change so much. You know, I have got, so from the first 3 months of Kanafa's life, I have pictures. I took Polaroids of him every day for about 3 months. And it's amazing to see how much he's changed.
Wait a second.
In 3 months. Yes, sir.
After he was born, though.
Yes, sir.
Okay, right. Okay.
That's why they counted in weeks. Yeah, because a baby at 2 weeks.
But they also,
and a baby
when you're in the womb, they also do the 8 weeks, 2 weeks thing. They say, you know, like 6 weeks before you can even, some women don't even know they're pregnant up to, I think it's 6 or 12 weeks. And then.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know I was pregnant. I thought I was dying for 3 months.
Oh, my God. Did you think you were sick?
I thought I was dying. So unlike you, when I feel sick and think I'm dying, I actually have to be at death's door before I go to the doctor.
Yeah, same. No, same. That's why I waited so long.
I thought I was dying. I had the most horrendous, like, 10 weeks of just, and it wasn't like classic kind of being sick, morning sickness or whatever. It just was tired, foggy head, fever, or everything.
Yeah.
Thought I was dying for 3 months. Didn't even know.
Jesus.
Until I went to my doctor.
So do you have an opinion? Because you're nominally Catholic, right?
Yes.
I mean, I say nominally because there are different kinds of Catholic, but a lot of Catholics are very strict about things. And so you're nominally Catholic, and you're a mother. And I wonder what your feeling is on all this insanity going on in America with Roe versus Wade and with the abortionists. And do you have a point of view about any of this? Because I'm trying to have an opinion, and I have to be frank with you. Like, a lot of this stuff is not my arena, and I'm not the guy who you should be asking for an opinion on this. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, as long as I'm not actually involved, it's someone else's decision about their own life and their kid's life. I don't love the idea of abortion. I think it's probably got some element of moral ugliness to it.
Calvinistic upbringing.
Yeah, no. I don't like the idea that anyone is just
dispensable.
Yeah, just because they aren't born yet, you can get rid of them and it's not murder. I don't like that. So on some level, I'm probably close to that point of view. But then I'm also on the same page with people who are just. It's none of your business. Let this woman decide. It's got nothing to do with the state. Mm. The state can't decide whether you must or mustn't have a child. So where do you fit on this thing? I mean, I hate bringing up serious stuff so early in the morning, but I haven't ever asked you about this, and I'm curious about what you think.
I am of the opinion that you must leave people alone. Let people decide what happens to their life.
Right.
I think that it's just, it's crazy to think... It's crazy to think that 50 years later,
yeah,
this conversation is still happening. Like, regressing much, really, of all the things that are happening in the world, this is the one thing that they want to obsess with. For 50 years,
okay, but
they've not moved.
But if you were president right now, or if you were a state legislator, because that's where they essentially what this decision is going to do, is it's going to kick this whole thing back to the states. So certain states, which are very pro-life, like Mississippi, it's going to be damn near impossible to get an abortion, right? It'll only be in the very rarest of conditions where the mother's life is threatened, or in the case of incest or rape, which accounts for a tiny percentage of total abortions, I'm told. So if you're in Mississippi, that's the case. But in places like New York and Chicago and Los Angeles, you don't even need to explain yourself, and you can go down to the abortion clinic, and it doesn't cost you a cent, and you can go and have it done. So obviously just like anywhere in the world, there are going to be places that allow certain things and places that do not allow certain things. But America is obsessed with this thing. If you were the boss, if you were in charge of a state, what would you decide?
Let people decide what happens in their lives. I mean, it's crazy to want to make people mm-hmm. who don't want to do something do it.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like, you don't want to have the child. Right. For whatever reason, you end up where you end up and you decide that you don't want this child.
Mm-hmm.
Why must anybody else who's not going to be part of that life
have
of raising
say.
That child or
yeah.
have a say?
Yeah.
Let people do what they want with their
See,
life.
See, I can't argue with that. I mean, you can't force other people to be moral either. You know, we've got rules. We've got laws against murder. We've got laws against rape. People still going to do those things. You can have laws against abortion. People are still going to have abortions. And it's probably better if they don't do them in unsafe and unhygienic and dangerous ways. But the biggest overwhelming thing here for me isn't so much about whether or not we're going to argue about the moral right of that child to live or the moral right of someone to decide that that child, unborn child can't live. We can have that discussion theoretically. But in practical terms, the part of me that gets like kicked into gear, and that's why I find this such a difficult topic to talk about, is government out re. You know, like, I don't want government to decide what anyone should be doing with their own bodies or with their children. You know, like, I don't like government making rules about how parents should raise their children, even when it comes to little things like corporal punishment, which is, again, a very controversial subject thing. Some people are going to say, no, the government should tell people that they're not allowed to punish their own children the way they see fit. The government must get involved in your personal life, your private life, the way you raise your kids. I say no. Government out. Mm. The only place we need you is, you know, roads, electricity, basic infrastructure, the army, borders, foreign affairs, and otherwise shut up. Shut up about our lives. So I'm kind of you've just made it clearer for me. Thank you.
Yeah, people do what they want with their lives.
Right, right, and then
especially when you know in America they also have America is the weirdest place. The more we hear and read and are involved in what happens in that country, it is fucking strange.
It's very strange.
They have a problem with children who are in the social system. So they have a serious problem with children who have either been abandoned or, you know, all of that. And still, they want to be able to legislate on people having kids. You're just increasing that problem too, you know, because if you have to carry a child to term and you don't want this child, what is the thing that you're most likely to do, abandon it.
Well, yes and no, but I mean, the answer to that is not to kill the children. You know, the answer is to find out why these irresponsible parents are forced to make a decision between a rock and a hard place. That's the real question to answer, and that has a lot to do with how stupid humans are and how irresponsible humans are. And you don't fix that by forcing them at gunpoint to be responsible, because a lot of people just don't have it in them. And all they will do is ruin that little person's life if you force them to go through with something. And I know that, you know, there are questions and there are all kinds of categories around adoption. We've discussed that on the show before. But it's such a messy affair because nobody really is in a position to tell anybody else what to do. You don't know what's going on. And I don't want the government to be telling anyone what to do. That's the worst arbiter of what should be done in any situation. So I'm glad you helped me understand a little bit of that.
You know, and you started by saying I'm nominally Catholic. I also remember a time when in the Catholic faith, mm-hmm. kind of even birth control was like looked at
as God.
People had like 6-10 children.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
what?
So that's such a good point, because we have moved along on that trajectory. I mean, now it's not difficult for even a devout Catholic to consider condoms, you know? It's not out of the question. And it used to be a thing, especially here in Africa, which was massively controversial, because people were saying, how can you be so irresponsible as to tell people that they shouldn't use birth control and that it's immoral to use birth control just because you want to bring more Catholics into the world? You know, that whole thing that Monty Python made fun of with every sperm is sacred. It's just, again, so what, we must get governments involved and we must have dogmatic and theocratic law all over the place? It's just not on.
But this is the thing that makes me go, this is an absolute regression. Mm. How have we regressed to a place where we're having this conversation again when there are so many other things that we could apply our minds to, our brains to, our energy.
We had a guy on yesterday.
You're just going backwards in time?
You would have loved this. We had a guy on yesterday. It could have been the day before. No, it was yesterday. To talk about his vasectomy. And it got quite heated, because ultimately what it comes down to is, you know, there are some people who are not having kids because they don't want to have kids. There's some people who are not having kids because they can't. They actually biologically are struggling to have children. And then there are people who believe that it is important for you to have kids because that is the only purpose, the only real reason for you to exist. And I understand all three of those arguments. I really do. The middle one, obviously, the one where you can't have kids, that's nobody's fault. That's not so much of an opinion as it is just a hard card that you're
biological dealt. Fact.
Yeah, you just dealt a tough hand by life, you know. And if you really want kids and you can't have them, there are options like adoption, but it's a tough one. And this guy came on and he was like, well, it's very difficult to get a vasectomy, which I didn't know. I didn't know it was hard to do this. And we had a really interesting discussion. But what it boiled down to for me is, like, you do you. You want to have five kids? You have five kids. Like, Lebang is, like, she's a mom of five. When this baby is born, five children, and God bless her. I know she's doing the best job she can. You know, I follow her on Instagram. I know her as well as the audience do. She is a good mother. She is trying her best. There are lots and lots of parents out there who are doing a very, very good job, and my hat goes off to you. I know what a good mother you are, Pumi. I know parents get nervous when you say this about them, because they're like, ooh, compared to what? Because that's always what happens out there. You know, there's always that superstar mom or dad who makes everybody else feel like they're not doing the best job. But if you love your child, you raise your child in a loving home, you're doing a great job. And no parent is perfect. So on one hand, I'm like, go for it.
Not a competition.
Not a competition. And on the other end, I totally understand people not having kids and deciding, I don't want them, because I'm in the middle. I'm like, well, I haven't yet decided to have them. As a man, it's easy because you can always just switch that thing on. You can. I mean,
till death, hey?
Well,
all the way. Yeah, you could be 98.
That's right. They're these very old men who can even, like, it's a miraculous thing. I mean, you can have a kid naturally if you're virile enough, but even by you know, all the artificial means, in vitro, in utero, and insemination of various kinds, you can really have a kid any time if you're a guy. If you've got healthy sperm and you've been blessed with, you know, good fertility, you can have a kid any time. It's so hard being a woman because you can't. There comes a point where you just cannot bear a child anymore, and your body just won't allow, and you cannot produce the eggs, and you also cannot bear it.
Well, it's not even about producing eggs. You know, every woman is born with the number of eggs she will ever produce.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right.
It's not a factory that happens every...
Right.
They just mature to a place where, when you hit puberty. But so what that means is, theoretically, it means when you are 40 years old, you're like, have 40-year-old eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it stops being viable.
Right. So actually, according
also
to...
because you have to do so much more work.
So,
like when you're 40 years old... With
how's
the
this for a theory? So if you get to 40 years old and you have a kid, according to the Koreans, you're a...
They're 40.
So hang on. The Koreans say you're a year older than you actually are. Because you started growing in your mother's womb and you were fertilized to conception. But actually, if we take the life of the egg, and you're quite right, you're born with those number of eggs, and if you're a woman who has a kid at 40, then technically that kid is 40, and you start off at 40, so you're born 40 years old. You could live to 140 years old, and it wouldn't be weird, actually. Right?
I love it.
That's so great.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's so fantastic.
All right, so we've come full circle. That was fun. Let's look at a couple of headlines this morning. Don't say you don't come here to hear interesting stuff. I mean, I didn't expect to have this conversation this morning. Jesus.
I just come here for the comments.
No. So do a lot of the people in the comments. South Africa is going to spend 22 million rand on a 100-meter tall flag. This is what we need to spend our money on, everybody. Apparently, the Department of Arts and Culture has provided more details about its National Monumental Flag Project. First announced in February 2022, monumental flags are installed by countries to express their identity and pride. Once constructed, it will become a national landmark and a tourist attraction that will serve to display the country's brand image. In its annual performance plan for 2022-23, the department said it had already embarked on a process to conceptualize, design, and ultimately install a national monumental flag with a flagpole that will be more than 100 meters in height. So the flag is not 100 meters, but we need to build this thing, which is going to be 100 meters high. So this is going to cost us 22 million rand. Tell me how. Well, 5 million is budgeted for the site-specific geotechnical studies. Doesn't that sound like a racket? It's going to cost you 5 million rand just to find the place to put the flagpole. This is some bullshit. They're also going to put 17 million rand aside for the installation of the monumental flag. Do we really need this? Do we? I mean, it'll be nice, but
sure.
Is this a priority when we've got people who are living in sewerage, we've got people who still don't have water and electricity in their houses? I mean, everyone doesn't have electricity, but running water, living in shacks, we've got massive problems with unemployment. And, you know, is this a thing that should be in the news? Is this something people are excited about? Am I just being a grumpy asshole? What do you think?
Really? Really? Is this what we're spending our money on?
Yeah, I'm thinking that's really stupid. And by the way, I saw AfriForum had to take the government to court because they're sending 50 million rand to Cuba. Cuba, in like human.
And the government is fighting tooth and nail
to be able to send the Cubans 50 million
to be
rand.
Able to send.
So AfriForum apparently lost their case, but now they're going to appeal. So government have to spend more money. We're probably going to get to a legal bill of 50 million rand, and we're going to have to still send the 50 million rand to Cuba. So it's 100 million rand. Can we just rationalize our spending? This is like that person I was talking about at the start of the show. When the shopkeeper sees you and they go, "Ooh, we're going to get this one." This is what's happening to us. We're spending 22 million rand on a fucking flag, and we're sending the Cubans 50 million rand. Guys, we don't have cash to blow at the moment. All right, we really don't. Where is this money coming from? The world economy is going at the moment. What the hell are we doing? This is dumb. So dumb. So I'm going to stick to, I am a grumpy old asshole, but this is a waste of money. Okay, and then by the way, it's not just us. Because Joe Biden seems hell-bent on spending money, too. The guy has put more money into circulation than any previous administration put together. All the other presidents didn't spend as much money as Joe Biden has, and he's only been president for like a year and a half. So he now wants to spend. He wants to send $40 billion. We talk about 100 million or 50 million to Cuba. This guy wants to spend $40 billion in the Ukraine. And
everybody's climbing into the – you remember me saying everybody's climbing into the send money to Ukraine bandwagon? But that's because they're charging interest on it. They're just lending the Ukraine money, and it's
so what is Joe Biden like, is Joe Biden like those guys who go to the strip club and they're like, they do that with the money, you know, where they throw the money at the hooker or the stripper, and the stripper happens to be what Vladimir
Zelensky.
Except the hooker
doesn't bring it back with interest.
No, I mean, you don't even get to see what you're paying for at a strip club if you're the US at this point. If I were an average American. And I were looking at the problems that America's economy is looking at the moment, very rational problems. And I saw this president going like this at the strip club with Vladimir Zelensky. I'd be, you know what? You need to calm your ass down. You need to stop wasting money. This is outrageous. And everybody's like, well, morally, we have this duty to Ukraine. No, you don't. The average American could care less what's happening in Ukraine. This is a very, very useful distraction for the world. It's also a
For all of us.
Like I said, the world. It's also a Vladimir Putin is bad, Zelensky is good binary situation that idiots will immediately gravitate towards. It's not that simple, as we discussed on the Burning Platform just the other day with Canton, and as you've brought up many times on this show, Pumi. So why are we allowing our presidents, our governments, to piss away money they didn't earn? That's our money, by the way. That's money we've worked and sweated and toiled for, and they take it from your account before you've even touched it. It's money that you... What's today? It's the 12th of May, all right? So for the average South African, if you're earning in the top bracket in South Africa, so far this year you've earned no money that you get to keep yourself. You know that? Think about it. What, 42, 43% is the top tax rate. So if you're in that top tax bracket, and everybody always goes, oh, the rich must pay their share. Well, let me tell you, anybody who's... in inverted commas, rich, who's earning income in the highest bracket in this country, you haven't started earning your own money yet. You've worked for the last 4.5 months for government. And then what do they do with that money? They take it and they spend it on Cuba and on a big flag. And if you're in America, they just give it to a nation that gives you nothing in return. Zero. What for? This is crazy. These people must be brought to book. I also think, by the way, that we've got to, in this country, we've now got to have a trial, just like we're having the State Capture Commission. We have to have a commission of inquiry into the lockdowns, and some people need to go to jail for giving bad advice on lockdowns. It has ruined this economy. It's set the economy back in a big way. There are still people out there who lost their jobs 2.5 years ago, who will never get those jobs back. They've lost their businesses. They've created even bigger problems in unemployment. And it's not because these businesses were meant to fail. It's because government told them they couldn't operate. Some people must go to jail for this. And I'm thinking we should have a proper commission of inquiry. I know Judge Zondo's tired and he's busy. So let's get another judge. Let's pull out Dikani Mosaneke. He did a good job with that.
I am not a fan of commissions. I am not a fan of postmortems. Here's a radical idea. Why don't we just fix from where we are?
All right.
Why don't we just fix from where we are? What will looking back and picking apart all of those things do for us, except for the fact that it takes our best minds, both and money, towards looking into the past to do what?
I just don't think governments should be allowed to get away with this. If you spent $50 billion you didn't have, guess who's up for that? You are. If you go into a shop and you spend 100 rand and you only have 20 rand, guess who is going to have to pay that bill? You are. But if Cyril Ramaphosa or Joe Biden or any of the people who made all those ludicrous and outrageous and stupid decisions around lockdown, they go and spend money they don't have, guess what? They don't go to jail. They're not up for the costs, and they should be. That's all I'm saying. So maybe we shouldn't have a commission of inquiry. Maybe we just go straight to court, and we go straight to the court of law, and we make people pay. People who've got to pay for stupid decisions, in politics especially. Moving on, one other quick story I want to throw in here, because there's a lot going on. Duduzane Zuma has vowed to build high-tech cities in South Africa over the next 20 years. This is Duduzane Zuma, right? Let's just think about this for a second. This is the guy...
Did you see the video? Did you see the video he put out like 2 days ago?
What an idiot.
Of himself in Dubai.
Oh, Jesus.
In a Ferrari, driving a Ferrari.
Yeah.
That's like driving a Ferrari in Dubai. Really? Smart cities?
What I love.
Suga.
It's Suga, exactly.
And don't think he's built a sandcastle in his life.
Oh, of course not. He's built nothing. Everything he's got because of connections through his father. He's like the South Africa's Hunter Biden. That's what he is, except less of a cocaine problem, less of a hooker problem, as far as we know.
So we think.
So we think. So I don't want to listen to what he has to say.
Do you know what happened out there in Dubai?
Don't you talk to us from Dubai, from your sports car and your apartment, which the Guptas bought for you, because you're basically like a patsy for them. That's all.
Basic.
That was your usefulness ended the day that the Guptas cut and run. You stopped being useful to them then, and that's why you had to cut and run as well. That's why you spend most of your time in Dubai, because if you come back here, the average South African knows that you're a crook, and they will lynch you. And the only people who fall for this crap are the people who are so desperate and so misguided and have been lied to so many times that they now think that the lies are the truth, and they treat you like some sort of celebrity. Dude, stay in Dubai and shut your mouth. That's what we want you to do. High-tech cities from a guy who's never built a goddamn thing. Really. You want to talk about a high-tech city? Find out how they built Waterfall in Midrand. That is a high-tech city. And you didn't need the Guptas or rotten stolen money or the son of a president who's defunct and who's never built any. We don't need you, thank you. Duduzane Zuma. Really. What a cheek. Do you want one more? Got time for one more.
One more? Let's go.
Government's going to subsidize taxis in South Africa. Again, haven't we done this already? Haven't we done this already? Didn't we, as taxpayers, buy all those new Quantums to replace all the minibuses?
Taxi recapitalization program.
Yes. But we paid for that. Let's just call it what it is. And when they say government, I love the way Business Tech, by the way, that's the website that this story comes from, Business Tech. Please stop using the euphemisms that government use. Government cannot subsidize taxis in South Africa. Taxpayers are going to subsidize taxis in South Africa. It's not like government have got this machine that takes tax and makes more of it and invests it carefully. Government don't have such a thing. What they do is they take your money and then they buy things with it. They spend your money. When the finance minister tables his budget, it's now Enoch Godongwana, right? He tables his budget. Then he sits there in front of us and he says, this is how I'm going to spend your money. That's like that's like one of the children in the household telling the parents, all right, you two have been at work now for the last month and a half, and we're going to take all the money you brought in and we're going to buy these toys because even though we didn't earn the money. Yeah, we didn't earn the money. Here's my plan for spending your money. So I'm sorry, government, when you say that you plan to subsidize taxis, what you're basically saying is taxpayers cough up because we're going to need to buy new taxis for an industry that is filled with gangsters and crooks. They didn't pay for their own cars. They don't have to worry about the cost of fuel because all they do is pass that on to the consumer. It's basically a racket. It's a racket. They kill each other in violence and over routes and at taxi stops and ranks. This is not an industry we should be actively supporting with our money, surely. And of course, at the top of all this pile of stupidity is Fikile Mbalula. So just to let you know, because it's always nice to wake up.
There's too much bad news. There's too much stuff to complain about in the news today.
I know. We'll
Where's
don't
the
worry.
Good stuff? Where's the good stuff?
Pums.
Where's the good stuff? Where's the stuff that makes us want to like wake up and do a new thing with our day?
Well, Congo Chris says, yes, this is it Grumble and Moan Day today. I thought the Burning Platform had started at 7.
Congo Chris.
We got to have one day where we don't lie to you. We got to have one day.
Gareth, maybe the medication's also making you a grumpy old guy. Maybe it's the side effect of the medication you took this morning. It's just made you a grumpy old man.
I did mention that brilliant doctor who does the robotic hysterectomies from a distance. I think that's something to be proud of. No?
Yeah, that's cool.
That's something we can be proud of.
That is quite cool, actually. That is quite cool. Yeah, in this country that brought the world the first like human heart transplant successfully. We can do these
things. We'll take it. I made my first batch of soup this week for winter. That's how you know. In my house, that's how you know it's winter time. You can smell the soup. You walk into my house, you're like, vegetable soup. There we go. That's my thing. So I made it I started it on Monday afternoon. Yeah, Monday afternoon I got home. Yes, yeah, this takes a while. So it cooked Monday afternoon, then I obviously switched it off overnight, started it up again yesterday morning. Then it was ready for lunchtime. It was very nice for lunchtime, but it was even better at supper. So that's pretty much all I've eaten for the last 3 days. So you want to know if maybe that's what's making me grumpy? Is it like I'm not getting enough protein? Because it's pure veggie. I don't put any...
So just the vegetable soup.
Yeah, it's the best. It's the best. I love it.
Yay. I've been making fire all week.
Oh, nice, Pums.
No, so it actually started that weekend when it rained all weekend.
Oh, yes.
As in making fire. Chopping the wood. I guess. 4 o'clock, well, not 4 o'clock, when I've been home early. I did have a couple of days where I got home quite late, too late to make a fire because it was just time to go to bed.
Right.
But,
you see, you've got like, with a fire.
4 o'clock, chopping the wood.
See, Pums, with a fire, you've got to know you've got at least 3-4 hours of sitting in front of it. And when I built this house, it's completely ridiculous because I don't use them, but I've got 4 fireplaces because there's one outside.
What?
Yeah, but I love a fire. So there's one outside, which I also use occasionally as a braai. Then there's the one in the TV room. Then there's one in the dining room, which is if you've got people for dinner, ooh, that's nice. And then there's one other room that's also got a fire in it, but I never use that. So technically it's 3, but I also like the look of a fireplace, even if there isn't a fire in it.
Yeah.
So just it's the hearth, right? I mean, you know, the ancient Romans used to have, what was her name? Demeter, who was the goddess of the hearth. I think it was the Romans. Yeah, Hestia was the Greeks, and Demeter was the Romans. And I think she was the goddess of the hearth. And the hearth is the fire around which families, great and small, used to gather in ancient times. And in South Africa and in Africa, no matter what your background is, whether you come from a long line of Zulus or you come from a long line of Khoisan or you come from a long line of Afrikaners and you know, Europeans of various kind, or you are a recent acquisition to this place. I'll tell you what, fires, you connect with something, man. It's power. It's not just about keeping you warm, and it's not just about looking pretty. There's something about that fire that takes you all the way back to the beginning of time.
It is. Well, taming fire is also one of the things that makes us special as humans versus all the other animals.
Yeah.
Right? It's just, so fire does that. It still kind of stirs up a primal thing in all of us.
Well, Z says, I love the idea of making a fire, but I'm not sure I'm up for the work it involves. Well,
it's a lot of work.
You mentioned you chop your wood. Because,
I do.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you're the only adult in the household who can do this. I mean, maybe Kanejo will be old enough to do this one day, but right now it's up to you. So do you go outside and you actually chop it on a I want to see
I
that.
Do. I absolutely, like, I love it. I absolutely love it.
All right.
Actually, if you give me, like, half a minute, I'm going to
All right, hang on. Let's give her a second. So I also have to chop the wood, but I buy it in these bags, right? And there's nothing better, though, than a big log of wood on a fire that burns for a long time, especially if you've got, like, people around and there's a whole reason to do it. But the cleaning up of a fireplace is nice.
Bam!
There's your axe. Pumi's got an axe. Okay, now you've shown us the murder weapon.
It has a little, like, to keep it, like,
sharp.
To keep it sharp and safe.
It's got a little
boiler. Yeah, it also plastic. Doubles up as my, it doubles up as my security system.
But do you also hate cleaning up the fire? Because that's a nightmare when you have to brush all those ashes into a pan and you have to get a bucket. And you also have to wait a while because those ashes stay warm for at least a day afterwards.
So I have a whole, but it's, you know, like most kind of cleaning experiences, right? it's in the ritual. And part of the ritual is what makes the charm of everything,
yeah,
right?
So right.
I'll clean the fireplace in the afternoon and then go out and chop my wood And then, mm-hmm. so it's all part of the ritual of the moment of like full enjoyment. It's like you and cooking your soup for 3 days.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes, you know, it's the whole thing. It's like awesome.
So what do you, how do you make your, I hate to get into the details here, but this is, I think this is way more interesting than what Dudujana Zuma wants to build. Do you use newspaper and like kindling, or do you use those firelighters you buy from the shop? Because I'm going to admit straight up, I buy the firelighters and I just put the wood on top of the firelighters and then I light them. And usually that's the best way to start it. And I know some people will scoff at that, but I never have newspapers around anymore. So I don't know how to make a fire other than firelighters or newspaper.
So I'm a sadist in that I still buy the weekly newspapers, all of them. So I don't know why. Right? I still do every Sunday morning. I'm out in the shops, buy all the papers.
Right.
Even though the City Press has literally become like 8 pages. But anyway, story for another day. But I'm that person. That's why I chop the wood, right?
Yeah.
So chop the wood so that I have some kindling and the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And although on bad days, and this is the thing about making a fire, is it's always also an art, right? It's not just like
totally.
So and sometimes
you have people who will judge you if you don't make a fire a certain way. There are people who there are people who take it so seriously. Like there's some people who build those little things where they put the wood this way, then they put it that way, then they build a little.
I'm that person.
Yeah, I get that. That's good. But if you do it in a more rudimentary fashion, but your fire works, great. It's embarrassing though if it doesn't work, especially if you're making in front of other people and it doesn't work.
So sometimes the fire lighters, I'll put fire lighters as well, but not as much, you know. So just to make the fire lighters last a little bit longer. Because all of these things now, you know, and I know Pumlani wants to talk about the cost of living in South Africa, but all of these things like add up now.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
So, well, on that note, I mean, Nico says he uses an egg box with oil and spirits or tea bags in paraffin, which is cool.
Ah, so that is clever. A clever idea.
And you also get those, according to Freedom Fighter, those compressed sawdust logs, which are the bomb. And the same price as a bag of endangered tree wood. Yeah, that's also a good one. I burn a loaf of bread packet to start the fire. A loaf of bread packet.
Well, table.
The plastic.
The plastic.
Ish. Plastic.
Sometimes when I don't have fire lighters, one thing that many South Africans have lots of, candles.
Uh-huh.
Like
yes.
A little half a candle.
Yes, that's a good one. Especially when the candles burn down to that last bit, if it's one of those big like pillar candles, because once it gets to that high, it's no use to you anymore. It's going to start just making a mess on whatever table you put it on. So just throw that into the fire and light that. That's a good way to go. Good idea.
So like candle shavings, like.
See, here we go. Toilet paper dipped in fish oil, my brew. Best fire lighter ever, says Lito. Wow.
Fish oil.
But fish oil from where? What have you got a koi pond out there and you squeeze out the koi from your pond? I mean, like, where are you getting this fish oil from?
Man. No. Fish oil is what fish oil actually is. When Lito says fish oil, is, and like most of us who come from townships, fish oil, Baba, is actually cooking oil.
Oh.
It's kind of like the way people say Checkers or Colgate.
Okay.
As a category. So the category for cooking oil is called fish oil.
Okay, all right. I get you. Lungela says the yellow pages burn very nicely. I mean, who even has a yellow pages around?
Who has yellow pages?
That's a rare thing. Lungela, you should keep that. It's probably going to be worth something one day. G-Star says best way to start a fire is lighter fluid. But you've got to be careful.
That's going to make a...
Yeah.
Speaking of starting fires, you know there's that... years ago in the 80s, it was quite a big film, but it's actually based on a Stephen King book called Firestarter, about a little girl who's got this kinetic energy that can start fires with her mind.
Okay.
In the 80s, it was one of those films. that kind of, it was like the Anaconda version of the 80s. It was that film that always came on TV. There's a remake coming out.
I might have seen it. I don't remember.
There's a remake coming out.
Why are they redoing all these Stephen Kings? Didn't they get them right the first time? Because they did this with It as well, right?
Yep, but they didn't have all of the special effects that they have now. Right? So yeah. Now it's like, when I went to see Doctor Strange last Friday and I saw that trailer, I was
So you were more excited about that than you were about the Doctor Strange movie.
Listen, the Doctor Strange movie was awesome. I took Kaneho to his first experience of watching a film in the hood.
Yeah.
We went to watch it at Newtown.
Uh-huh.
And you know the thing about watching films in the hood with my people is watching films, especially like action films, is a visceral experience, right?
Yeah.
You wanna shout and clap and but like, and then watching it in some places like Santa, there's always a grumpy lady going, shh. There's always somebody shushing you.
Yeah.
And there's none of that in the hood. It was awesome. It was really awesome.
That's superb. All right, listen, it's 7 o'clock. We've got to take a quick break when we come back. It is time for the burning platform. Sure, this hour went really quickly. So we'll find out what's going on in the world. We've got Pumlani Majozi. We're also going to be joined by Alex Weiss, who is new to the burning platform, but may not be new if you're a fan of The Daily Friend. And we'll find out more about what they both have on the agenda. We'll talk to them about NUMSA strikes, the mining in Durban, where Cyril was apparently the keynote speaker, the ANC's recent Eastern Cape conference, the cost of living, which everybody's talking about, and education in South Africa, all issues which we need to discuss. So it's going to be a fun and interesting burning platform this morning. Don't go away. CliffCentral.com.